Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. And we're here with Steve Stone. Walk through the garden. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
What's going on today?
Well, we've got another really nice fall morning going on here.
Yeah, it's kind of really nice.
Yeah, we're
going to be in around 80 today and tomorrow, and then we have rain coming and cold weather, but chillier weather, I guess.
No, I didn't see that. Here, I'll have to look that up real quick.
Yeah, I think starting about Wednesday, we're supposed to have highs in the 60s.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I just would like to see some more consistent showers, maybe at least a couple of days. I know the farmers probably don't want that because they're hitting
it
hard.
Not now, yeah.
They're hitting it hard, but boy, we've got a lot of...
Well, I think they have plenty of time to get it in, so maybe they'll be able to take a little break here.
We've got a lot of lawns we put in that would certainly love a drink right about now.
Sunday night into Monday morning is when it's supposed to be coming through, and pretty much all day Monday. I think I saw on Channel 7, maybe they were showing possible total accumulation or whatever. I don't know if you call it accumulation with rain, but a little over an inch in our area and a little bit less to the south. So,
oh yeah, that would be fantastic. I would take an inch right now. With we've got lots of seeding projects we've done, and boy oh boy, it would be nice to get an inch on those. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the time of year that it is, again, I've talked the last couple of weeks about it's just the perfect time for planting, landscaping in general, dividing, separating your perennial flowers, just basically about anything. We are, again, Ohio State and all the colleges and powers to be, you know, say by the end of September, you really want to be wrapping up all your seeding projects. And that's absolutely true. The earlier you can get it done in September certainly is better. But with the forecast I'm looking at, as far as extended forecast, temperatures still look, you know, really nice, pretty mild. Also, like I had mentioned in the last couple of weeks, soil temperatures are really warm at this point. So seeding is still on the table as far as I'm concerned for the next couple of weeks. I know I've got some projects I'm working on at home, or a project I'm working on at home, and I'm going to try to get some seeding done. Plans are this weekend, but unlikely. It'll probably be later in the week till I get to it.
Well, you don't have Buckeyes football to watch this week, so you should be able to get to it.
Yeah, but I have two college girls home. Well, one's actually out of college.
Put them to work.
I have two girls home, and they're wanting to hang out with their dad. So I don't think
they can hang out with their dad doing.
I don't think running a rototiller spreading mulch is what they came home for. I think it might.
But
be,
it won't hurt them.
I think it more might have something to do with going out to eat and maybe go shopping. I'm not sure.
Dad's credit card. There we go.
Exactly right. So I've got some work to do, and I'm going to be doing some seeding. And you really, I think you're going to be fine up into maybe the first, even the second week of October. I always tell people a lousy seeding in the fall is still better than a great seeding in the spring. I'm sure we're going to get enough days to get that grass up and growing this, you know, and especially if you water it, you're going to be amazed at how fast it grows. We seeded a yard for a guy, oh gosh, I think it's been 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it, you know, we did a good job, we always do, but the guy, he just hit some rains that just came, it's down south by Rushi. The rains, immediately after we did it, we got two rains that went through. One was about 3/4 of an inch, and the next one was about 3 inches, was actually way too much, because it rutted up a couple of places. But he's basically going to be mowing this weekend, and he's just amazed how fast that came up. And that's just pretty typical when you get the right amount of rain. Mm-hmm. And again, the soil temperatures warm, it's amazing how fast that grass is going to come up and start to fill in. So that's why seeding is, you know, you want to do that this time of year. There's lots of other, you know, turf lawn type projects that you want to be doing this time of year. Unfortunately, it's, you know, I always recommend doing corerating, hollow tine corerating spring and fall. right now is usually about the best time to do it. Unfortunately, it's pretty dry, and so a hollow tine corerator is not going to do the job that it should, because the ground's just really dry. It's not going to pull the cores out of the ground like you would want it to, a deep core, because the ground's really dry right now. But that's also something that you can certainly wait on doing into October, even into early November. Before it wasn't last season, might have been the season before, I can't remember, but there was one year that I finally got to doing my corerating, and I did it. I always remember it was Thanksgiving morning, so, you know, obviously pretty late November. But corerating is a invaluable practice. It's just not done enough, in my opinion, with our heavy clay soils. Hollow tine corerating, again, fall and spring. If you're a golfer, you know what I'm talking about. They do the tees and the greens. I think most courses do them at least once a season. And then the courses will top dress with a sand mixture to keep the top few inches very loose with the sand in there. That helps the damage from on the tees from people, you know, teeing off, and then the greens. That just helps the turf fill in very quickly. And it also brings moisture, air, and fertilizer to the roots very quickly of the roots of the turf. So that's why corerating is so important. Definitely something that needs to be done. But again, it's not early, but you definitely are going to want to wait until we get some more, you know, significant rain to get that soil to loosen up.
So if we do get an inch of rain on Monday, will it be soft enough if people want to do that next week? Or you got to see what happens and let it soak in a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've been doing a lot of work, and we got a lot of projects going on. We've been doing some excavation for some structures, and we put foundations in for our outdoor entertaining areas, bars and stuff. Point is, we've been digging, not just a couple inches. We've been digging down to put some foundations in, and it's pretty dry.
Yeah.
Down pretty deep.
Yep.
And so the more rain you get, the better off you're going to be, because an inch, I don't think, is going to do a whole lot. I mean, it's going to get your lawn to green up, because that's going to soak in maybe an inch, maybe a little bit more. But overall, an inch is going to be wonderful for the tree, shrubs, and turf, but as far as, you know, kind of loosening the ground up a little bit and getting it to soak in deep, an inch isn't going to be enough.
Yep. So I think I saw this morning, I think it's one of those national agriculture shows. They always do a weather thing. I think it's called Ag Country or something. I don't remember.
Sure. Yep.
They always do I think monthly they do a 90-day outlook, and they're looking at basically normal, near normal temperatures and near normal precipitation for the 90 days, so the end of the year, basically October, November, December. So it doesn't sound like we're going to be dry. We're just not going to be wet, it sounds like. So, but there'll probably be you know, stretches of dry, stretches of wet, but
sure.
But so what does that do for people that are looking at doing projects, assuming the temperatures stay normal-ish? Does that mean that they can probably, if they just don't have time to do some of their separating and planning projects, that they're still going to be okay for a few weeks?
Well, if you're installing anything new in your, say, landscaping around your house or someplace that's relatively easy to get a water hose to, certainly now is the time, and you just, you know, I wouldn't have any concerns at all. One of the reasons is, and we're pretty dry, but the turf actually looks decent, or in most cases looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. And that's because our temperatures have been relatively mild. We haven't had a lot of humidity, and so the turf goes immediately off color, and your plants will struggle immediately through, you know, June, July, and August, when you have really warm days, you have high humidity, breezy, but it's obviously the temperatures. When the temperatures are up in the 90s, plants are going to dry out literally in a day. I mean, they could literally dry out in a day. With the temperatures we're having now, the fall weather, you know, you could probably get by with even with a new landscaping, maybe watering once a week. And in the springtime or in the summertime when it's really hot, you probably need to, for brand new plants, you may need to water every day, every other day, every third day at the most, or at the least. So, again, it's just it's a lot more forgiving right now. I mean, it's just because of, you know, really mild, cool nights. The plants aren't transpiring as much as they norm or as much as they would if it's hot. So they're not using as much moisture. Again, soil temperatures are really warm. I can't say that enough. So rooting, whether it's a new grass seed that you put down or new plants, they're going to root in very quickly, and again, due to the soil temperatures, and if you keep them watered, you're going to be able to get them established very quickly. So anything new that you're planting, you're perfectly fine now.
And that includes bulbs and things that you're not seeing?
Sure, yeah, okay. Bulbs, time. I mean, I don't want to say great time, really only time of year to plant your spring flowering bulbs are going to be, you know, September, October, November. As long as the ground's not froze, you can go ahead and get those things planted, and you're still going to see them flower in the spring.
But the warmer it is, the better they'll
establish for sure, because the bulbs.
So November's okay, but
I planted bulbs really late before, and they do fine actually. We have a lot of bulbs right now for sale, and in the end of the season, we still have some left and they're not sold, I've taken them home and planted them really late before, like in November, and they flower fine in the spring. Obviously, they usually are a little bit later than they should be or normally would be, but they still root in and flower. But yeah, earlier the better, because once you plant them, immediately after you plant them, you want to give them enough warm weather, because they'll put roots out and get established before the cold temperatures come, which they need, which promotes their flowering the following spring. The one thing you get to a point where it's kind of a diminishing return is if you get into, you know, November, I guess, for sure would be your cutoff date. You don't want to get in and divide and separate too late in the season, because if you're dividing and separating and you're not giving your daylilies or hostas or whatever any opportunity at all to kind of put some new roots down before winter sets in, then you're certainly going to have limited success. I don't want to say they're all going to die, because they're not going to, but you certainly are going to get into a situation where you know, you're going to have some mortality. Some of those plants just simply aren't going to have enough time to get rooted in. And if we have a really severe winter, they may not come back in the spring. So the division and separation, I definitely would try to get that done in October and not do that real late. And I know I talked about this, I think the first show we did, try to, if you can, on most varieties of ornamental grasses, whether it's the maiden grass, fountain grass, black fountain, Carl Forrester, heavy metal, there's a lot of really cool varieties of ornamental grasses. Those are definitely perennial plant that I would definitely wait till springtime to divide and separate those. Maybe, you know, March would be a good time to do that, because those can be kind of fussy going through a severe winter, and you definitely are going to lose those, depending on how late you divide and separate. It's just better to wait till spring.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with some more great information from Steve Stone right after this.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Switching attachments is simple, and a smooth hydrostatic transmission makes for easy operation. The Kubota BX Series, the number one selling subcompact tractor in the U.S. for over 10 years. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Your Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Spending more time indoors? Perhaps it's time for a new wall color in your life. At Wangler Ace Hardware, we can make painting a simple pleasure. We carry a full line of quality Clark & Kensington paints available in any color you bring us. The Clark & Kensington paint and primer in one is a great value, starting at just $30.99 a gallon for interior flat finish. Friendly, knowledgeable folks will guide you through choosing paint, along with products for surface prep and application. Visit the paint studio at Wangler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery for friendly, expert advice on your fall paint project.
Airfo- focused. They see the future as an opportunity. They're growing, and they're looking for someone like you who shares in the same vision for a better future. Cooper Farms has been raising turkeys since 1938, and today they're raising hogs and chicken egg layers and making a variety of delicious food products. What's in store next for Cooper Farms? Join them in their quest for innovation, opportunity, and growth. Apply online today at cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, it's more than just a workplace.
Trader Days is coming up at the Progressive Sportsman's Club on St. Peter Road, Thursday through Sunday, October 1st through 4th. Weekend wristbands are just $5 each. Step out and see old friends and make some new friends. Don't miss this big annual event with vendors for everything from collectibles to guns and knives to beef jerky and cheese and all kinds of other flea market stuff. Plenty of parking and food will be available on the grounds, including their famous barbecue chicken dinners on Saturday starting at 4. Don't miss Trader Days, October 1st through 4th at the Progressive Sportsman's Club on St. Peter Road.
We're back. Steve Stone, A Walk Through the Garden. And Saturday morning, we've talked a little bit about lawns and doing some fall planting. And is there any like maintenance, anything that people ought to be thinking about? Or did we finish with what we needed to talk about with the with the fall planting? We have more to cover there. Do we
Definitely wanted to shift gears and get into turf. We talked a little bit in the first break about aerating, which is hugely important this time of year, hugely important for our real heavy clay soils to, you know, loosen that up. And again, what that does, it promotes dramatically better rooting, a more fibrous root system. Also, again, promotes oxygen. Roots do take in oxygen. They just don't take in water and nutrients. They take in oxygen. So our heavy clay soils can become really void of any oxygen because, you know, obviously farmers, you know, they till, no-till, but they still do some sort of tillage almost yearly, and that kind of loosens our ground up. It grows things great, but it can get to a point where it just gets too compact, and then you struggle getting anything to grow. That's why core aerating is so important. This is the best time of year also. We talk about this is the best time of year for seeding. This is also the best time of year for fertilization. And again, everybody wants to or is excited to get out in the springtime, and they hopefully go to their local garden centers and, you know, the local hardware stores would be the best place to go and get your gardening stuff and then also your fertilizers as well. Everybody's excited to fertilize in the spring, and they get their spreader and they get their bags and they just blast the yard with fertilizer, which, you know, isn't all bad. You should always do a soil test and see what is in your lawn before you just arbitrarily go out and start buying fertilizer and just blanketing the whole yard with fertilizer.
What if your brother-in-law knows that his lawn needs this? Do you need to still go?
Nope. Absolutely not. Every lawn's different. I mean, Neil, you live in a home that's over 100 years old, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, 170, yes. Yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, 170. Yeah. Okay.
172, according to the county.
It is dramatically more than 100 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
So your soil texture, soil type, everything ever has to do, anything around your house with your lawn, landscaping, and turf is going to be completely different than somebody that lives out in Indian Heights. Newer homes.
That's only a half a mile.
Right. It's only a half a mile.
Should be the same.
Absolutely. Should be.
It's all the same town.
Right. I think there's a little, I mean, there's more equipment, we'll say, that can move, push, yeah, dig up and haul away the good topsoil, so then you're left with what's underneath the foundations of the house and what, you know, is down in the ground from when they put the roads and curbs in. Yep. That's what they spread around and then expect me to make stuff grow in. They built your house, chances are they probably dug it with shovels. And
yes,
I mean,
there might have been some sort of mechanical something, but from what I can understand, that whole the hills on both sides of Elm Street 49 were artificially brought in.
Okay.
That's because, you know, it would be a little too inconvenient, a little too convenient for the road to just sit 3 feet lower on one side and 5 feet lower on the other. And be straight down
right.
Straight side. I mean, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Something happened there, and it appears that mostly clay was brought in. I think what I've been told, they brought in clay because it would be, they didn't care about yards. They had farm animals in. So they brought in clay so that it would be compacted and wouldn't settle a whole lot when they built the houses. So the surrounding stuff isn't loose stuff. Everything around those houses on those hills are those foundations are in clay on purpose. What was something that I don't remember if it was somebody like Rudy Wendell or Harold Ranley or somebody like that knows how all that old stuff used to happen. That was their theory on how that all was done.
Yeah, just from the time, you know, which, you know, 100 or 150 years, whatever difference, but the soil gets changed, manipulated, hauled away, added, whatever. So every home site could possibly have certainly is going to have potentially a different pH, certainly different organic matter. Those are all things that it's just good information to have, especially if you're purchasing a fertilizer to fertilize your lawn, and if you're, trying to do the right thing, and if your soil test comes back and it's super high in phosphorus, why get a bag of fertilizer that's really high in phosphorus? Because the turf, the ground, the lawn, nothing needs it. So that's why it's a good idea to do a soil test. They're very inexpensive. A lot of the local, you know, mills will do that for you. We run ours over to Brookside Lab in New Bremen, and they'll very quickly and inexpensively turn a soil test around, tell you everything you need to know about those cores you pull out. pH obviously is hugely important.
So how does somebody do that? Would I do that myself?
You certainly can do it yourself. I mean, I've got a core puller, which will pull a core of soil that's, depending on how deep I can push it into the ground, maybe 5 inches. You just don't want to scrape up what's on the surface. Mm-hmm. You want to try to get a profile of the soil. So you want to get something that's at least 3 or 4 or 5 inches deep, cut with a shovel, you know, cut a sliver out and put that in a bag. I've got, I always have bags out at the shop from Brookside. Put that sample in there, run it over. I mean, I can drop it off. And again, you'll have all the information you need for, you know, organic matter, pH, CEC, everything you need is going to be in that. Mm-hmm. And then again, you can, you know, purchase a fertilizer that's going to be most beneficial for the lawn, and then also not putting a bunch of whatever down that the lawn really doesn't need.
So if I go to Walmart and ask the guy in the gardening thing, he can't tell me which one's best for me?
Well, he certainly is going to tell you what you should buy.
Because it's the one they make the most profit on, or right, the one he gets a bonus on.
Right. They're going to tell you what you should have, but in reality, it's, you know, probably not the best option.
So it might be better to just take a neighbor kid along that knows nothing and just ask him which one has a prettier bag.
Right. Which one? Exactly.
Or just maybe even better, go to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Well, that's where I would start. That's why I said your local nurseries and garden centers are going to be able to give you the best information, you know, out there. And then, again, kind of get off topic, but the fertilizing, you know, again, in the fall is better. What I was getting at with that was in the springtime, you know, you go out and buy your fertilizer, and again, you really want to have that soil test because you want to know what you're applying. You want to make sure you're applying the proper amount, because you don't want to apply not enough, then you're kind of wasting your time. You don't want to apply too much, then you run the potential of, you know, runoff and, you know, that in town if you apply too much, and that would, which it shouldn't, but I'm sure it happens if you get it on the driveway sidewalks and in the gutters, that's going to end up in the stormwater, and you certainly don't want that. So you just want to make sure you get the right product and you apply it at the right rate. Fertilizing in the spring is great. I mean, it certainly helps your lawn green up quickly, but the turf's not stupid. The turf knows what time of year it is by day length. And so when it's springtime and it's warming up and the days are getting longer, the turf knows it's springtime and it's warm and the days are getting longer. And all that food that you're feeding it, that fertilizer, is going to be pushed into new growth. So it's going to be promoting growth above ground. So that doesn't necessarily make a strong turf, but it also can promote you mowing three nights a week when you're applying fertilizer heavy and you're applying it in the spring. It's so important to fertilize this time of year, along with, like I said, your core aerating, overseeding, slicing, all the other things you want to do this fall, or should be doing this fall. Fertilizing is another, you know, huge factor in getting that turf happy and healthy. Again, the turf knows what time of year that is due to day length. The turf knows it's getting cooler at night and the days are getting dramatically shorter, which when you get up early like me and you, you know the days are getting shorter because it's dark when you get up and it used to be light. So, and that turf will take that food and that fertilizer, and it has no intentions of growing above ground at this point. That turf will put all that nutrients down into the root system of the plant, and so it kind of makes the roots fat and sassy and ready for spring, ready for a tough winter. It's got plenty of food stores to get it through the winter. And then in the springtime, when you start getting those warm days and the days start getting longer, it's ready to start growing. So it's going to produce blades, but it's also going to produce a lot of roots, which makes a lot more durable, tough lawn. When you're fertilizing late season, if you just fertilize spring, you're always going to have a nice lawn in April and May, but you're really not promoting any type of root structure and root growth, and that's what makes a turf look good and make it healthy and will get you through hot, dry summers, is having a really dense, healthy root system. You can only really get that in the fall. You can only promote really good root structure and below ground growth in the fall, because in the spring, again, that grass is just growing above ground. So that's why it's so important. And you can do fertilization, you know, now would be a great time. You can do at least two, possibly three applications yet this fall. And then if you don't fertilize in the spring, you're still going to be perfectly fine.
Because you have good roots.
Right. Fall fertilization is fall fertilization, and basically some of your fall projects that we've been talking about, are much more important than your spring projects.
But yeah, but it's spring when you think about it.
Right.
It's spring. I want all this pretty stuff.
Right. And people talk about mulching. Oh, I want to mulch in the spring. Okay. What's something I've been hammering on? I hammer on soil temperatures. Okay. Well, everybody wants to mulch in the spring, and the sooner you can get your mulch and go out there and mulch in the spring, you're ahead of everybody else, and your landscape looks beautiful before everybody else. Well, you're also taking that mulch and you're spreading that blanket of mulch out, and you're insulating that cold into the ground. So when you get those warm, sunny days in April, the sun really can't get to the soil and warm it up, because you've got your new layer of mulch down. When you mulch in the fall, you're insulating that warmth into the ground. So again, if you're doing plantings, new plantings, division, separation, all those other things, well, I'll just wait till spring and put my mulch down in the spring because it'll look pretty. Yeah, that's true. But if you mulch everything in really nice this fall, you're going to have a lot better success with those plants, because you're insulating that heat and that heat.
So it sounds like you're saying, if you want pretty mulch, do it in the spring. If you want pretty plants, you do it in the fall.
That's a good way to put it. Can I write that down?
You won't have to. You'll remember it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I probably heard that from you sometime anyway.
That's exactly right. Again, mulching in the fall is going to promote better plant growth, root development. It also is going to hinder weed growth. Fertilization is important in the fall, which everybody likes to do in the spring. Mulching is important in the fall, which everybody likes to do in the spring. And pre-emergent, putting a pre-emergent insect or pre-emergent weed control down in the fall is also a very good idea, and everybody thinks of doing it in the spring. So there's just a lot of projects that everybody thinks of doing in the spring, so you kind of need to rethink that a little bit.
Yep. Let's take another break here. We'll come back with Steve Stone with Walk in the Garden.
You could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on plastic surgery and a new wardrobe, but that's not what would make people love you. Now, a new brick paver patio, that would be a start. Maybe a fireplace. Oh, I know, a fire pit and a water feature. Oh, you're going to be so loved. Forget the gray-haired dude on TV selling online romance. Have Kurt and Eric, the real artist at Nature's Green, give you the makeover that will make you and your home irresistible. Nature'sGreenNursery.com.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
Is your sweet tooth saying, feed me? Wayne Street Market has just what you need. All varieties of Marie Callender pies are 20% off at just $6.29, and all varieties of Mrs. Smith's pies are 20% off at only $5.99. And just in, they now have several varieties of Wix pies in their freezer case. And if you're craving ice cream, Premium Prairie Farms ice cream is $1.70 off at only $4.59 each, and all varieties of their Best Choice gallon pails are only $4.99 each. Buy local and save at Wayne Street Market, your hometown store that saves you more.
The 2021 Win on the Wabash Super Raffle will be held August 27th and 28th, 2021, and will feature $650,000 worth of cash and prizes given away every 2 minutes from noon to 7 o'clock. Tickets for the 2021 Super Raffle will go for sale on October 3rd at 8 a.m. and can be purchased at Ambassador Park in Fort Recovery, Ohio, or through our website, wowraffle.com. Only 8,000 tickets will be sold and will sell for $100 each, and there is no limit on how many can be purchased per person. Check out all details for the sale of the Super Raffle tickets on our website or Facebook page, and mark your calendars for October 3rd to purchase your 2021 WOW tickets.
We're back with Steve Stone. We're just discussing some other things. So anything else we want to talk about with the fall things we need to be thinking about?
Yes, the on this kind of dovetails into what we were talking about before the break as far as fall and turf or lawn care. Again, a lot of people, you know, just, and I get it. I mean, spring is spring, and I enjoy spring just as much as anybody, but fall's actually just a better time to do a lot of stuff. Another thing that's better is going, and it is exactly what I was talking about with turf, is, you know, again, people are winding down this time of year. You know, the kids are back in school, lots of sporting events, you know, just a lot of things going on. And everybody wants to, you know, again, treat their lawn. They see dandelions in the spring and they're like, oh my God, they see those yellow flowers and they go into some sort of conniption fit, and they're immediately out there wanting to treat, you know, which is great. I'm the same way. I don't want dandelions in my yard. But you get to this time of year, and this is actually a lot better time of year to treat for broadleaf weeds than spring. Again, it gets back to exactly what I was talking about, the physiology of grass and weeds. It's just the, it's just plant physiology. This time of year, the weeds know what time of year it is too, obviously. And so they're, you know, taking the sunlight that they get and the moisture that they get, and they're doing their photosynthesis thing, and they're putting all of that energy into their roots for overwintering. You know, perennial weeds like Canadian thistle and dandelions and plantain and all that stuff are perennial weeds. Clover's another really good example for this. If you come in the spring, especially with clover, because clover and ground ivy can be really difficult to control, you come in the spring, May, and you do your broadleaf application, you're going to wipe out dandelions. They're pretty easy. They're pretty easy to knock out. Canadian thistle, not as much. Ground ivy and clover are going to fool you, because you're going to treat them in May, and you're going to go out 2 weeks later, and they're all turning brown and withering and you're like, ah, yeah, I got them. And then as soon as we get into July, you're probably, especially with clover, you're going to see that stuff just popping up everywhere. Because again, those plants are growing above ground as well. So you can go in and treat with your 2,4-D, your Trimec, whatever you're using. You're going to wipe that stuff out and you're going to think you've won. Well, the roots are probably still intact, especially with clover. And so you're going to treat in May. You're going to be stoked through the rest of May and June. And then in July, you're going to start to see that stuff come back because you didn't get the roots. You just kind of burnt the tops off. And then you're going to get busy in the fall and forget about it. And then you're going to see it in the spring and you're going to treat it again in the spring. And you're really never going to get rid of the problem. If you treat in the fall, which is now, and that plant is going to absorb that herbicide and it's going to, again, it's going to translocate it down to the roots like it's photosynthesizing everything else. And you're going to get root and all. You're going to get much better control. You're going to get much better control with any sort of broadleaf application, applying it in September, October. And I've heard people say, well, after the first frost, you can't, or you shouldn't apply a herbicide. And that's absolutely false. As long as we have really warm days, those weeds are perennials. They're growing now and they're going to be back in the spring. But again, even after the first frost, you can treat. Obviously, you're going to get to a point with fertilizer and your herbicides that once the plants really start to shut down, and I mean completely shut down for the year, no, you shouldn't be out there applying fertilizer to a dormant turf because the turf's not going to take the nutrients up and it's pretty much all going to run off. Likewise with your herbicides, I mean, once you get real late season, that you're not going to get good control. But I'm telling you, from it's still September, October, probably, I mean, again, every year is different. Every fall is different. Mother Nature doesn't work on a calendar. Mother Nature, you know, she works on her own schedule. And so you could potentially get good control with herbicide as late as early December in some years. Or, you know, it could be the end of October. It just depends on temperatures and how, you know, the plants are reacting, how they're, again, what part of their life cycle they're going through. And in temperatures, obviously, like I said, temperatures and day length and all that stuff makes a difference. But you definitely are going to get better control. There's just absolutely no question you're going to get better control for your broadleafs in September, October, November than you are in May.
Can you do the herbicide treatment and the fertilizer treatment back to back, same weekend? Does that make any difference at all?
Makes absolutely no difference at all. You certainly can do your applications together. I know a lot of the lawn care companies, they have most of them nowadays, you know, that's kind of changed in over the years. You saw the guy years ago from Chem Lawn that was out there with the gun and the hose and they're spraying a liquid material that was a liquid fertilizer and usually a herbicide at the same time. Things have shifted a little bit. Most of the companies now have the ride-on spreaders, and so they're four-wheel deal, and they have they'll have a herbicide, a liquid herbicide that they'll have tanks, and then they'll spray or spread granular at the same time. And actually, that's tremendous. That's way better because you're going to get much better control with a liquid herbicide to control any of your broadleaf weeds. You know, Scotts does a great job, and it's a local company. You know, their headquarters is in Marysville, so every time you go watch the Buckeyes play, you drive right by their main headquarters. Huge, you know, multi, I don't know if it's a billion. I'm sure it's probably a billion dollar
company. Yeah, probably is, I'm sure.
They sell everything granular, and they can, you know, they'll sell you a granular fertilizer and herbicide together. And that works okay. I mean, it's certainly fine. I'm not here to bash Scotts, but I'm just telling you, if you've got problematic weeds to control, which would be, again, clover, plantain, and ground ivy, those granulars, you have to apply that stuff when it's wet, immediately after it rains, or in early morning when there's heavy dew, because those pellets have to stick to that foliage, and then the pellets stick to the foliage, and the moisture on the leaf allows it to break down, and then it absorbs into the plant. You know, does that work? Yeah, that you know, it's going to give you pretty good control, but it's nothing like doing a liquid application where you actually coat the whole plant with a liquid herbicide. You're going to get much better control. So those ride-on spreaders will do a liquid broadleaf application, and then they'll put a granular down, which, again, the liquid fertilizer application that if you get through your lawn care company, because nobody spreads liquid themselves, unless, I guess they could use a Miracle-Gro wand or something like that and apply it, but that works fine, but there's just not hardly any residual left. The plant gets it immediately and it's gone. When you do a granular application, certainly homeowners for sure always do a granular application, because if you buy the better, you know, bags of fertilizer, there's some that's very inexpensive and that's all quick release. So again, it lasts longer than liquid, but it's certainly still quick release. If you get a good turf fertilizer like what we have, it's 50% slow release. So instead of when you're, you know, hard to do a graph on radio.
Yeah.
but if you have the quick release fertilizers, you get lots of real high spikes in your fertilization of your turf, real high, then kind of low, high, low, high, low. So it's got a lot of peaks and valleys in it. If you use a fertilizer that's slow release or 50% slow release, you take all those real sharp peaks out and you make it a little bit more of a smooth wave. And so you just get an even feed for a longer period of time. That's why a slow release type fertilizer is certainly better for your turf.
Yep. So anything else you want to cover today? Or
I don't know, we put out an awful lot of just invaluable information.
Brilliant stuff.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant stuff in the last 45 minutes.
So I guess maybe to sum it up, you basically are saying, do stuff now. Don't wait till the spring.
I'm basically saying,
just because it seems like you should do it in the spring, there's a lot of stuff.
Get off the couch and get outside.
Yeah, can't watch Buckeyes football today.
Well, not for another couple weeks.
Yeah, I think it's 2 weeks, maybe, something like that.
But a lot of fun stuff going on in Ohio. The Reds, by gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Clinched a playoff. Isn't oh, my, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Grandpa Pinky's happy.
Yes. I will bet, and he probably had something to do with it.
He may have.
He finally said, here's one of these years where I can just make a difference because it's only 60 games. I think I can make this happen.
And nothing.
Of course, he dozed most of the season. Then the last 2 weeks, man, he's. I think they've lost two games in the last 2 weeks, I think is what it is.
Something, actually,
something
that's
crazy like that.
That sounds like how Grandpa used to watch the Reds, because he would doze off. The older he got, he missed a lot of the games because he would doze off sitting there watching. But I always remember, man, he would have the TV on. It drive me crazy. He'd have the TV on, but he'd turn the volume down so he could listen to Marty and Joe, because he could not watch a game without listening to Marty and Joe.
Yeah, well, why would you?
Well, there's like a 10-second delay between the television and Marty and Joe, so it's confusing as heck trying to watch a game when there's a 10-second delay.
But he didn't have pause in those days, so he couldn't do that.
But he'd be sitting there, and you'd think he was asleep, and you'd come in, and he'd switch the channel. Ooh. And you'd think he was sound asleep, and as soon as you switch the channel, turn that back.
That sounds like my dad. Of course, he wasn't watching the Reds. He was watching random stuff. And everybody in the room, there'd be a lot of times, there's like my aunt lived with us for a couple of years, and my mom and my sister and me. And there's something on that is not interesting to anybody at all. And my dad's zonked out. And if you go to change it, he'd wake up and say, "What? I was watching that. You weren't watching that." Yep, I was watching that.
Grandpa always said when the Reds were winning, they were everybody's Reds.
Yep.
But by gosh, when they were losing and they stunk really bad, they were Pinkies. They were Pinkies. What's the matter with your Reds, Pinky?
Yeah.
They're his.
Yeah.
They're all his. But by gosh, when they were winning, everybody loved the Reds. But by gosh, when they were losing, they were his. What's the matter with your Reds, Pinky?
And sometimes they just go into the grocery store just to say that to him.
Yep.
Oh, man. He was something else. Most people don't remember him, but he was a a neat guy. He was happy all the time. I never saw him when he wasn't happy. Maybe you saw him when he wasn't happy with
no.
with the Reds no. around. But
no, even when the Reds were losing, he was still he always
big old smile
and that big old roar and laugh he used to have. I have a lot of fond memories of going over there and talking Reds and him taking me to the Reds games. I always remember that too, and I didn't understand it at the time, but he'd take us to Dave and I and all his grandkids to the Reds games, and I'm not exaggerating. He knew every usher at Riverfront Stadium. He knew every one of them, and they all called him Pinky.
Yep.
And we would buy like standing room only tickets, and at the time, you know, they were a couple bucks.
Yeah.
And by the second inning, we're like three rows up behind the Reds dugout, and it was this, you know, this kind of a handshake and pat on the back thing to those red coat ushers, and I'm assuming there was a couple of $5 bills in that handshake.
Yeah. And in those days, that was a lot of money.
And then all of a sudden, we're sitting three rows behind the dugout. And it took me a long time to figure out what he was doing there, but he was a great guy. Wasn't anyone quite like him?
Well, that's probably how maybe that's how Carlton Rhodes learned all this stuff, because he does that same thing.
That's right. That's exactly.
He might have learned that from his father-in-law.
That's exactly right.
Well, anything else you want to throw in?
We'll be here next Saturday.
Yep. We'll see you then on Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.